It's just a matter of giving your best effort and riding out sort of the tough parts and having unwavering faith, I think, in yourself and your ability to know that you'll come out the other side on it.
That was Lindsay Corbin, and this is the Running on Om podcast. I'm your host, Julia Hanlon. And if you haven't heard yet, I have some exciting news to share with all of you. I've set up a Patreon page where you, yes, you can support the podcast. I'm so grateful to receive messages from people on a daily basis to tell me about how this podcast is changing their life. It's truly an honor to provide these conversations for all of you. But in order for me to continue producing Running on Om for free and at the highest quality, I need your help. Patreon is a platform where for as little as $2 a month, you can support Running on Om and get insider access into the podcast, behind-the-scenes clips from recording sessions, opportunities to be coached by me, and get a personal shout-out on the podcast. I'm so excited about the opportunity for those who tune into this podcast to help me grow this together and connect a little bit deeper through Patreon. Also, a big shout-out to all the people who've already contributed. I'm so grateful for your early support of my Patreon journey, and if you too would like to support Rue, visit patreon.com/runningonom. That's patreon.com/runningonom, and know that any amount of support helps. Now, let's dive into our show. Hey friends, if this is your first time tuning into Running on Om, welcome. I'm your host, Julia Hanlon, and if this is your 199th time, welcome back. 199 podcasts, that's one away from 200, and later this week on Thursday, I'm releasing a special 200th episode where I actually answer listener questions. I've never done this before, really opened up about my story and shared some secrets, surprises, things that I've learned along the way. I'm super excited for that. But what do we do here at Running on Om? Well, every week, I bring you conversations with pioneers of the mind-body-spirit connection, people I believe who have insight for all of you that could change your life. Today's guest, Lindsay Corbin, is a professional triathlete who's known for her authenticity, her grit, and grace, both on and off of the race course. I had the joy of sitting down with Lindsay in person in our hometown of Bend, Oregon last week to discuss her experiences with overcoming adversity with strength and patience. Lindsay is the American record holder in the Ironman triathlon distance with a blazing fast time of 8 hours, 42 minutes, 42 seconds. Lindsay's been in the sport for the past 10 years competing as a pro and completed over 20 Ironman triathlons. In our conversation, Lindsay opens up about her challenging 2015 season, where illness and injury took her away from competing and training. She reflects on the lessons she learned from the past year, including the power of focusing on the process instead of the end product. Lindsay actually takes us through a training week and even reveals which out of the three sports is her favorite. Whether or not you consider yourself to be an endurance athlete, this conversation still has some powerful insight that I believe everyone can relate to. From Lindsay's stories, I hope you'll be inspired to look at your own life and ask, where in your life can you build greater mental strength? And are you willing to take risks to pursue what you love? If you dig this conversation with Lindsay, reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram, let us know what you thought about it, and share it with your running buddy, your best friend, your dad, your dog, or someone you know who wants to be inspired by the power of investing in the process. You guys ready to dive deep in today's conversation with Lindsay Corbin?
Yeah,
it's it's different. Transition, non-race transition.
Are we in T1 or
yeah.
T2?
It'd be T3.
Oh, it would be T3. Okay.
They don't have one, but I just made that one up.
That's cool. I love it. So did you ever think you'd be back in Bend?
No. When I graduated in 1999, I never thought I'd come back at all. I was definitely ready to leave town. But then once I started racing, traveled all over to different places and had an opportunity to see other places. And I trained in Tucson for a while. And then we were living in Montana for 15 years, which is where I met my husband. And we were ready for a change. And just of all the places we'd traveled for racing and training, we kind of kept coming back to Bend. And we would come here in the fall to get ready for the World Championships, which are in October. And so we came for 3 falls and really enjoyed our time here. And so then when we were looking to move, we thought, well, maybe, you know, of all the places we've been, Bend is the best that we liked. And so we decided to move back. And that was 2 years ago. So
That's cool.
Yeah.
And how has your training changed since being back here? How has Ben changed your training?
So moving back here, a large reason we moved was for improved training. I was living in Montana, and Montana was awesome, but there was sort of a few ceilings there. One would be the weather wasn't as great as it is in Bend. And so just even having the sunshine is huge. So like 40 and sunny is way different than 40 and cloudy. So like a big change was the weather. And then obviously a lot of other athletes live here. And so just having the opportunity to have other athletes to train with, and just a variety also of training routes. So that was new. And then actually I met Jay DeSherry, who works at Rebound Physio, and he had helped me through an injury in 2013. And so after I met Jay, I thought, imagine like if I could see him once a week, what that could do. And so that was also a big part of it. So yeah, kind of a combination of healthcare and good weather and good people to train with and sort of a new stimulus was kind of the combination. And yeah, none of it I regret so far, and it's all been really good.
And your parents are here as well.
Yep. Yeah. So my parents are still here, and I never thought at all that I'd be someone that thought, oh, I got to go live where in the same town as my parents do. But actually now that we're here, it's a great luxury. So we try to get together once a week for dinner, like Sundays, either they come to our house or we go to their house. So it's a good week too. Or it's a good way to catch up with each other. And then my sister and her family live in Portland, so a lot closer to them as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And growing up in Bend, I know you did a couple different sports. What were those and what were you most passionate about?
So I grew up, like in high school, I ran cross country and track. I went to Mountain View, and huge running town. Like Bend High had a huge running team. I think we had over 100 people on our cross country team in high school. And in high school, for me, running was just a ton of fun. I was competitive, like I was on the varsity team, but I was never state champion or had any huge accolades like that. But my memories of growing up were just that it was a lot of fun, and we were exposed to a lot of adventure and sort of outdoor, you know, trail running and raft trips and mountain biking and just being outside and adventuresome. And then I also ski raced with the MBSCF program, which is still here. So, I really enjoyed skiing. I really wanted to go to the Olympics for skiing and be a downhill ski racer, but I was tiny. I was a late bloomer for sure. And so I only weighed like 100 pounds, and that doesn't get you down the mountain very fast to win ski races. So yeah, I mean, and then towards the end, I just started enjoying running more and maybe got a little bit burnt out on skiing. And so I was drawn more towards the endurance sport activities, I think.
Yeah. And so take me to the transition then into triathlon. How did you go from running to adding two new sports?
Yeah. So I basically was taking a break from running and sort of in flux and not really sure what I wanted to do next. And my parents are very active people, and they do a lot of bike touring. And they invited me one summer to go on a bike tour with them from Spokane, Washington to Seattle. And I'd been like on a mountain bike before, you know, a cruiser bike, but I'd never been on an actual road bike, especially a trip. And so I borrowed my husband's road bike and I rode with them from Spokane to Seattle. And that really opened my eyes to just endurance activity and just the sense of empowerment of that, like, you could ride 100 miles in a day and you'd ride over a mountain pass and see things that, you know, normally you see in a car, but to see it, you know, from two wheels. And I would just love it. Like I said, you would just be out on your bike all day and beautiful scenery. And I really, really loved, I think we climbed maybe 4 or 5 big passes. And so the big climbs I loved going fast on the downhills. And so, and I actually ended up riding with like a faster group of people than my parents. And so people were like, wow, you really know how to ride a bike. So at that point, I kind of was looking for my next challenge. And I knew that I knew how to run well. And I knew, well, I think I could ride a bike pretty decent. And so I thought, if I could figure out the swim, maybe I could do this thing called a triathlon. And some of the people that I was studying with in exercise physiology were doing the Ironman in Coeur d'Alene. And so I'd heard people talk about a triathlon, and it just seemed also like a social sort of way to hang out with people and have fun. And so I just started it for fun, and I never would have thought that I'd be sitting here giving a podcast about my career.
Yeah. So, yeah. 10 years later as a pro.
Yep. Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. And your first Ironman you raced, you were a pro. You raced as a pro.
Yeah. So my first Ironman was in June of 2006. And that was the first time I'd done some triathlons before that, but that was the first time that I'd followed a training plan and really applied myself to training. And I think I was so scared by the distance that I was like, I better nail the training. I better be as ready for this as possible. And as I followed the training plan, I got more and more fit. And so I entered a few races sort of as tune-up races to get ready for that. In those races, I was racing as an amateur, but I was winning the races outright and beating a lot of the professionals. And so a couple people put a bug in my ear of like, oh, maybe you should race as a pro. And I really was just floating around aimlessly and not sure what I was going to do with my life. And so I thought, the week before the race, not only would I do my first Ironman, but I would also race it as a professional. So, yeah, so I applied for my pro license a couple weeks before, but basically the week before the race, I got my pro card. And so not only was it my first Ironman, but it also was my first professional race. And so that was a double whammy.
And what would you say was the biggest lesson you learned from that first Ironman, that race?
Well, that race, it was one of like the hottest Ironmans I've done. It ended up being over 100 degrees in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, which is crazy hot, especially for that region in that area. And I didn't know anything different because I'd never raced an Ironman. And so my only goal or thought in my head was just, I don't want to walk during the marathon. I don't want to walk. And so it ended up being really, really hot out. And I, you know, came out of the swim wherever. And I think I came off the bike in maybe 25th or so. I was pretty far back, but it was so hot that a lot of the other professional women were dropping out left and right, or they didn't pace it right. And all I was thinking was, don't walk, don't walk. And I ended up finishing, I think, like 6th, 7th, or 8th. I don't even remember, but I passed like half the field on the run because I didn't stop. And I didn't know any different. Like, that was just all I thought in my head was that, like, you just run this whole thing. And I ended up just passing people and qualifying for the Ironman World Championships. So that, I feel like my first experience was a very lucky one, but also was like pretty unique, you know, looking back at it and how kind of it all played out. So it worked out well.
Yeah. And pretty telling of the mental strength and grit that you had.
Yeah, definitely. No, and I think that that definitely is like one of my strengths as an athlete, is just having tenacity. And particularly it plays over in the longer distance races. I do both the half Ironman and shorter races, but particularly in the Ironman, just having that mental fortitude of, I mean, you really don't know what's going to happen. And so even if you're not feeling that good, you just have to keep giving your best effort and pushing forward. And you just sort of never know what's going to happen out there. So,
and finding that mental strength and tenacity, was that something you feel like you tapped into in your childhood through athletics or in another realm? Or was that a discovered gift you first found with triathlon?
Yeah, I think I discovered it more later in life than I did earlier. And it's actually kind of interesting because I look at both my parents. My dad was an athlete growing up. He ran marathons and he did triathlons. And when I was a little girl, like, I'd ride my bike with him while he was running to help him train. And so everyone always thinks like, oh, she got the athletic genes from her dad. But now that I'm older and have perspective and like get to know my mom better, I realize my mom is really hard-headed and she's just relentless. She's super determined and she's actually very athletic as well. But just, I don't know if it's a generational thing, but just she didn't do sports and stuff when we were growing up. So I don't know who I get it from, but I definitely think that the like relentless work ethic, comes from my mom. So that's kind of interesting, you know, to see that as I've grown older and,
Yeah, that is kind of cool that sometimes it's only until later in our lives can we really reflect back on our families.
Yeah,
and understand, definitely. Like, oh, that's where this came from.
Yep, exactly. And it's actually been unique because since graduating from high school and like being older, my mom has taken up biking more, which she was the one that I went on the bike trip with. And so, but I encouraged her to get a road bike. Like she was riding a tandem bike with my dad. And so it's been cool to encourage her to do a lot of things that, like I said, I just feel like that generation, you know, she was busy raising kids and, you know, taking care of us. And so there wasn't really time for sports, but now she's a lot more active and athletic. She goes to the gym and lifts weights and runs or walks. And so it's been cool to sort of pass the candle back and forth between each other.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, that's so beautiful. And so mental strength, I know 2015 was a pretty challenging year for you with your virus and bacterial infection and your stress fracture.
Yeah.
What kind of newfound mental strength did you find from this past year?
Oh man. Yeah. That's a hard one to answer. I mean, I think the biggest thing is just knowing that you always overcome rough patches, no matter how rough they are. And so, I think when you're in the moment, it's easy to forget that. It feels like it's never ending. Nothing's going your way. It's easy to throw pity parties. I will 100% own that I had my fair share of like down in the dump and totally depressed days, you know? But then now I've come out the other side of it. And it's like, I've been there before. I've had a stress fracture before last year. That wasn't the first one I've had. And like I said, when you're in the moment, it's very difficult and it feels never ending. But then every time you sort of overcome that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be an injury. It can be, you know, training's not clicking, or maybe you've got stress in your life outside of sport, or, you know, you're having hardship with business. You know, I mean, it's applicable on so many levels, but it's just a matter of giving your best effort and riding out sort of the tough parts and just having unwavering faith, I think, in yourself and your ability to know that you'll come out the other side on it. So.
Yeah. I was reading on your blog this really great post you wrote about your couch.
Oh, yeah.
And the time spent on your couch and how it was pretty challenging for you as someone who's so driven to actually just stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you explore that a little bit with me? Like how sometimes our greatest gifts are also sometimes the things that get us to the places we are in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said earlier, like tracing back to, I think my mom is just, I have a hard-headed sort of personality and not really one to like take no for an answer. And so, you know, when the doctors tell you you have a stress fracture, it's like, well, you want to know why you have it and what can you do with it? You know, everyone always says, you know, find something you can do to like take your mind off of it. But for me, just being was the best sort of solution to get injured or to get healed from the injury. And so for the first half of the injury, I just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And whether it was pushing for answers or pushing and creating stress on myself mentally as to why I wasn't healing, or, you know, taking crazy supplements, or, you know, doing weird regimens like, I mean, I can't think of anything weird, but, you know, like people use lotions or crystals or, you know, you hear like all sorts of stuff people do to like try. And I was so desperate to be healthy and be racing that it was like, I would be willing to try anything, like sleep upside down, whatever, you know. And then finally, it just got to the point where it was like, maybe you should just do nothing. And that's kind of where we got to the point that like I had explored so many different options in trying to heal and trying to get better and trying to cross train and trying to stay fit. And my husband, I think, just got sick of hearing about it every night at dinner, that he said, why don't you just do nothing, you know? And he kind of sort of challenged me in a joking way, like, I bet you can't go a week of like nothing. And he's like, when I say nothing, like not even going to the grocery store, not taking the dog for a walk. And at that point, I didn't really have any other options to try. Like I felt like I'd exhausted all my other options of trying to get healthy and heal and stay fit. And so I was like, all right, let's just see. And then, I mean, my personality is definitely all or nothing. And so if we were going to go all in for resting, that's what I went in for. And so, yeah, we have this gorgeous orange couch from Crate and Barrel. And I just sat on it basically definitely I sat on it for a week and like did nothing. And like people say, well, did you read or did you watch a movie or did you journal? And it was like, I really did nothing. The first week, it was just like my own boot camp of just doing nothing. And then you start to explore your thoughts and, you know, and I did end up, you know, reading some books and catching up on some things. But I don't know, it's just a weird combination of, like, I definitely was depressed a bit and in a funk, you know, and it just felt never ending. But then all of a sudden, it just, the light started to open up a bit more and the clouds started to lift, and I did start, like, then my pain went away. So then I thought, well, maybe this is working, you know? And, yeah. And then slowly you come out the other side of it. So that's a long answer, but
no, yeah, this is long form. I mean, and yeah. What's interesting is that, I mean, you were saying you have your husband, and I know he's a really big part of kind of mm-hmm. your life and your career, and to have people who believe in you and yeah. like see the best in you and see what maybe you need when sometimes you don't see it.
Yeah. And it's awesome too, because he tells me all the time things, and you have selective hearing. And so I don't always hear him. And then I'll say, oh, my coach told me this. He's like, I've been telling you that for weeks. You know, why don't you listen? But I feel super fortunate to have Chris in my life. Like, I was not an easy person to deal with last summer, and he always kind of knew the right thing to say, and he knew not to, like, he knows when to not back down and to sort of be hard-headed and almost be an ass. I don't know if I can say that on here, but, you know, he knows when to be like, get your butt in gear, you're being ridiculous. But then he also knows how to be like, this sucks, I'm empathetic, I feel really bad for you. And then, I mean, he's definitely the most, like, the epitome of positivity. Like, I mean, even last year, broken femur, horrible virus from South Africa. He's like, I think you're going to win the world championships. And it's like, I don't even know how I'm going to race there. Like, you know, but
you're like, honey, I can't even run right now.
I know, but like with conviction, like ever since the first year I raced in Kona, he's like, oh, you've got it. You've got what it takes to win this race. And so, I mean, that's what you need in your life, whether it's a husband or coming internally or from training partners. Like, you need that from someone, because we are not superhuman, you know? And, I think having that source of positivity and the never give up, because it's hard to channel that from within yourself all the time. At least yeah. I know I personally can't. So, and I don't know many other elite athletes that, you know, can 100% believe that all the time. So,
totally. Yeah. Totally. Was it ever hard, like, publicly when you were going through a really tough year, to be able to either, like, when you showed up at Kona to spectate, was that challenging to have to, like, be public and yeah. upkeep, like, a persona?
Yeah.
When inside, it sounds like you were struggling.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one thing that I did was try to be really honest and open the entire time I was injured. I'm a huge fan of sport in general, whether it's running, tennis, basketball, triathlon. But I follow sports closely. And one thing I noticed is that a lot of times people get injured and then they disappear and you don't hear from them. And I understand why, but at the same time, I think a lot of times people put elite professional athletes on this pedestal of, like, we're superhuman, but the truth is we are 100% like everyone else. Like, we put our pants on the same way. We have good workouts. We have bad workouts. We skip workouts. Like, you know, that's just part of it. And so for me, I just wanted to maintain authenticity and honesty about my injury. And so for the most part, I feel like, I mean, I could have blogged every week. You know, there's definitely more I could have done, but I felt like I was pretty honest with my fans and people that follow me about what I was going through. And so I did go to Ironman Hawaii to watch it, and it was the first time I'd ever watched the race. I'd raced it all 9 years prior. And so and I made a decision. Well, at first I went back and forth of if I wanted to watch it or not, but I knew I was going to watch it regardless because I'm a huge fan of the sport. So Chris, my husband, said, well, if you're going to sit at home on the couch and watch it, you might as well just go there and watch it in person and take it as an opportunity to maybe learn some lessons from the sidelines. And so we went, and then when we decided to go, I thought, I want a purpose there, because I knew if I was just sitting around watching all these people that were crazy fit and, you know, ready for the race of their lives, I probably would get depressed. And so I decided if I had a job to do or, like, something to take my mind off of it, then maybe I would feel, you know, I would escape those feelings. And so I ended up volunteering, which was awesome. So I got to experience the race from completely the other side than you do as an athlete. And then race day, I got to watch it as well. So it was a really unique opportunity. And I feel like I was pretty honest with like people about like, you know, it sucks not to be here, but at the same time, I'm going to make the most of not being able to race. And so, yeah.
Yeah. One of the sayings that I saw on your website is grace and grit.
Oh, yeah.
And so I feel like you handled the situation and you handled the year and maybe the pain and adversity with grace.
Yeah.
And being able to share about it with people. What would you say was a takeaway from actually watching the race or something you're putting into action in your training right now, having actually seen it?
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes back to that first race, and it honestly is just to never give up. I mean, I closely watched the women's race because that's the race that I participate in. But it was interesting just to see a couple of the women, you know, one gal who lives here in town, Heather Jackson, we trained together, and she was pretty far back out of the swim. And then another gal, we're both run for Saucony. She was almost last out of the water. And so to see those people early on in the race, you know, we could have written them off thinking there's no way they're even going to be in contention later in this race. And it's such a long race. And when you're in the race and you're in the moment, like I've been there where I've had a deficit out of the swim, just not coming from a swimming background. And when you're in the race, it feels like the world's ending. Like I'm never going to be able to make up this gap. And sure enough, both those gals, as an example, ended up in the top 10 on the podium. And so it was just interesting to see the race throughout the day as like people that maybe overexerted themselves. And then to be on the Queen K Highway, which is where the marathon takes place, and actually see the look in people's eyes of just suffering and, you know, people that definitely like overpaced their race or didn't nail their nutrition plan and their wheels just falling off. And then you see people that, you know, focused on themselves and really took care of the small details, and they just were plowing through the field. And so, yeah, it just was interesting to see it all play out from the other side. And I think those are memories I'll hopefully be able to take into play for next year. And then also huge motivation, you know, it just is a good reminder that the fire is still burning bright inside of me. And I told Chris and other people, I don't need to watch that race again. You know, like once was enough, but I don't need to make a habit of watching it from the other sidelines. So
yeah, you want to be in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you want to fulfill Chris's, yeah. Chris's statement.
Yeah. And not, well, it's also obviously a dream of mine, but yeah. He's the one with the conviction in it.
Yeah. It's awesome. Well, you've done 20 plus Ironmans or completed 20 mm-hmm. plus, as you said, a lot of hours out there. And mm-hmm. I imagine there's only a few that really everything kind of clicks.
Yeah.
Those ones where everything just flows. Would you say when you set the American record in 8:42:42,
yeah.
Was that a race where things clicked? Or was it one of those experiences where you chose never to give up?
Yeah, you know, actually that race in particular was really interesting. I had PMS that morning, which is like really weird to talk about it, but I was pretty emotional. I actually cried race morning, and I am not a big crier, but I was like, I couldn't, Chris and I lost each other before the start, and he had my backpack with all my goods in it and stuff. And we were supposed to meet at one place, and then it got crowded. And, you know, races in America, you can see a bunch of people, you know, and say like, have you seen my husband? But in Austria, like nobody knows who my husband, you know, and I just before the start, I was putting out why I finally found him, and I was frazzled before the start, and I actually started crying. I was like, I don't know if I can do this, you know, and I kind of was having these moments of self-doubt. And then once again, Chris to the rescue is like, you're fine, just get in the water and go, you know? And yeah, the swim started. I had kind of an average day in the swim, and then in the bike early on, I actually was losing time to the leaders, and I definitely had moments of feeling kind of discouraged. And then halfway through the bike, like things started to feel good. And then towards the end of the bike, I actually ended up closing time to the leaders. And that's the beauty of Ironman, is it's such a long race. So much happens out there that you can't really get too excited if things are feeling good. And you also can't get too down in the dumps or hard on yourself if they're not feeling good, because it's just such a long race. And so I would say the first half of the race, I didn't feel that great. And I got off the bike with the second place gal, and I did not want to run side by side with anyone. And so I took out the run kind of aggressively. And I remember looking at my watch thinking, you know, if you run close to a 3-hour marathon, you're going to be right around the 8:45 mark. And then just as the marathon went on, I felt better and better as we went. And then, you know, it was a 3-loop. No, it's a 2-loop run. But basically with an hour to go, I knew like if you can do this last part in under an hour, you're going to be really, really close to the course record. And I, knew that that was, I think, similar to the American record. And so, yeah, so that was kind of what just kept pushing me. And then the other thing too, is like when I've been in situations like that where I'm having a good race, it's, I realize now like that opportunity doesn't come every race. Like there's a lot of races where you don't feel good or things like that. And so I remember just thinking that last hour, like don't race this chance because you don't know when it's going to happen again. And, you know, just keep pushing because you just don't know, you know. And at that point, I was pretty sure I'd win the race. And it was just more like, okay, you can either fall apart, you know, trying, or, you know, you can just went, you know, it was just a matter of like pushing that envelope. And so I just kept pushing it and yeah. And then it was awesome. You know, I mean, not at all what I expected, and definitely going into the race, like I knew I was fit, but it wasn't, my eye wasn't, you know, leading into the race like, oh, I'm here to set the American record. It was just, I was here to race and give my best and see what happens. And so, like I said, it was just one of those days that, that yeah, you think, you know, you don't know when that opportunity will come again, so you don't want to waste that chance. So I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you crossed the line, did someone tell you at that moment, okay, you just made the American record, or did you know?
I mean, I had a pretty good idea. I knew what the course record was. And so that was kind of my big thing, was I just wanted to go under the course record. And sometimes the finish clock isn't set because we start separately from the males. And so I wasn't 100% sure, but I was pretty sure. And I think within like a minute or two, they came up to me and said, you know, that I'd broken the record, and they have like these beers that are the size of your leg, and they dumped a giant beer over me and lots of celebrations. So yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Heather Jackson as someone you've trained with. Do you have like a consistent training partners, or do you do most of your training actually alone?
It's kind of 50-50. I mean, swimming, I definitely can't do alone. That's like the one that's just so tough to do alone. I didn't grow up swimming. I didn't learn to swim until my early 20s. And so I for sure rely on a swim group, here in Bend. And so, I definitely swim with people in the mornings, but most of them actually aren't triathletes. A lot of them are just straight up swimmers. So it's kind of nice to not have to talk about triathlon, you know. It's just, and it's actually, we swim at, I was saying before we started, 5 a.m. Nobody's talking or socializing at that hour. It's like, show up, get in the pool, do the workout. And actually, because I don't really love swimming, it's like you're sleeping through the whole thing. You know, it's that early in the morning, you get out of the pool and it's like, did that workout just happen? You know, it's 7 a.m. when we get done. But yeah, and then biking, it's 50-50. Like for the long rides, it's good to have company. But so I try to seek out company for a few rides a week. Also easy, like the super easy kind of recovery rides are always hard to get out the door for. So if you can recruit a girlfriend to catch up, you know, on, that's always fun. But my race specific workouts, which are 2 to 3 days a week, it's almost easier just to do them on my own. My coach lives in Boston, and so he'll send the workouts, you know, that day of what you have. And so when they're really specific like that, it's almost easier just to do it by yourself. But, and then, running is 50-50. A lot of the runs I do are off the bike, so it's almost easier to just do it on my own, 'cause it's kind of hard to coordinate people to come and meet you at the house to run. But, I run with my husband kind of for easy runs, and then hard runs, sometimes he'll come on the bike or the scooter, which is nice too.
So when you say you mostly run off the bike, I know there's a lot of different triathletes who periodize their training in different ways.
Yeah.
Is that something that's pretty signature for you of your training, is to do those bricks?
Yeah, we do a lot of running off the bike kind of for a variety of things. I mean, I think it's really important for practicing your nutrition plan, because obviously, you know, the marathon takes around 3 hours for me to run on a decent day, and I'll never run 3 hours before the race. But a lot of times you'll go on like a 2 hour ride and then an hour run. And so that's actually 3 hours of physical activity, similar to what you'd be in the race. And so it's a good way to practice to make sure you're kind of eating enough and that your gut can handle running on, you know, the nutrition plan you're going to use. And so that's sort of one reason, I think, is for nutrition. And then the second reason is obviously because that's how we do it in a race, is you ride your bike and then you run. And it's not always hard running. Like today before I came here, I did a 60 minute super easy ride, like 15 miles an hour. That's pretty slow for, you know, what we do. And then I ran 9 minute miles off the bike, just cruising on some dirt trails. And so that isn't a hard workout, but it's more just recovery and building durability. So it just depends. But for the most part, yeah, I think our coach tries to have us running off the bike a fair amount.
And your coach, you said, he gives you your workouts actually on a day-to-day basis instead of like a week?
Is it that? No. Yeah. We get them in a week blocks. So okay. We get them in a week block, but then after every workout, we communicate through an online platform. And so you send in your data and then he'll adjust maybe the next day's workouts depending on. So you like have an idea of what's coming, and we definitely sort of follow a pattern with our training. Like Mondays and Fridays are our easy days, and then we go really big Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then again on Saturday, Sunday. And so, I mean, you kind of have an idea of what's coming, but then, you know, maybe 2 weeks ago I woke up and I wasn't feeling great. So then we move stuff around. So, it's interesting. Like I, you know, growing up, I had coaches that see you face to face, or, you know, that's how it is with running. And so this phenomenon of like, you could have a coach that doesn't live in the same town as you, but now thanks to technology like Garmin and computers and Training Peaks and different platforms, you know, your coach can know everything from heart rate to cadence to like Strava now, you know, where you went, you know, so it's pretty, I think, cool to see how technology's been able to change that.
Yeah, it's so thorough. Yeah. And someone you get to see in person is Jay, who I've actually had on a podcast before.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
He's awesome. Tell me a little bit about how your work with Jay has transformed your training and your racing.
Yeah, so the biggest thing with Jay was we met in 2013 and I had another stress fracture and it was in my lower leg. And it was 6 weeks before Ironman Hawaii, and I'd been injured with shin splints March through July. And then in July, my shin splints turned to a stress fracture. And then I didn't run at all for July, August, and then came to Bend September 1st. And the doctor had said I could start running September 1st. And so I came to Bend thinking, all right, I'll prepare for the Ironman World Championships. And I just tried to start running as soon as I got to Bend and still kind of was having pain in my lower leg. And I had read Jay's book, Anatomy for Runners. And
it's
then,
awesome.
Yeah, really good. And then my friend works for him. And then also other friends in town like Jesse and Matt were like, oh, you got to go see Jay. And so I went to see him and just explained my situation. And he said right off the bat, like, what are your goals? And I told him I wanted to be top 10 in Hawaii. And then he asked the fastest that I'd run there. And I told him, and he looked at me and said, I think we can make both these things happen. And I thought, no way. And so what we did was we incorporated a ton of strength training. So he said, rather than loading your legs up with lots of mileage, running mileage, we're going to focus on making you as strong as possible. Because the big thing with Ironman is over time, as the race goes on, your form deteriorates. And as your form deteriorates, then you start running slower. And so he said, if we can make you as strong as possible and so that your form doesn't fall apart, if you're still holding form at mile 20 and other people are falling apart, it's not going to matter if you have run mileage in your legs, because your body knows, like, you've done this many Ironmans, it knows how to run that far. And so we focused a lot on speed work and sort of plyometrics and just having a quick turnover, and then strength. And so we did a ton of strength training. And the biggest thing for me was he was having me lift really heavy weights at low reps. And that was new for me, because I always had the idea that if you did that, you would get huge. And I didn't want to put on a bunch of muscle weight. And actually, I didn't get huge, but I did build up that durability. And so fast forward 6 weeks to the race, and my longest run before the race was 9.5 miles. And that was, you know, I've never done anything like that. It was kind of a suicide mission, I felt like. But Jay ended up coming to Hawaii with us. And I got past mile 9 of the marathon. And it was like, all right, this is my longest run. And I just felt like a ticking time bomb waiting to blow up. And I just never blew up. Like, I never, like, the strength training really helped. Like, I held my form, and, you know, I focused on things I could control, like nutrition and staying cool in the heat, which are huge factors in Hawaii. And I was passing people in the back half of the marathon. And then with 10K to go, I think I was in the top 15. And then I was in 14th, 13th, 12th. And then there's this hill maybe 2 miles before the finish, Palani Hill, that's like a famous hill at Ironman Hawaii. And we were nearing the top of the hill in the race, and I was in 11th place, and Jay and my parents were there, and they were jumping up and down and freaking out, and they were like, 10th place is right there. And I just knew, you know, again, like I said, at Austria, it's like one of those things that all right, it's now or never, you know, and it's like, you just don't know when this opportunity is going to come and you don't want to waste a single moment. And so I just went for it. And like, that's where you have that mentality of like, okay, I can either sprint and try and sprint and pass this girl and get 10th, or I can not sprint and take the easy way out and get 11th and nobody's going to really care. And so like, what are you going to do? You're going to like, you're a risk taker. So yeah. And I ended up passing her like with a quarter mile to go. Yeah. And got 10th, which was kind of the final podium place. And so that was a very special day for me. And I probably would say that that was one of my better races mentally, just to like, I mean, you have no self-belief, you know, like when your longest run is 9 miles, you don't go into a race thinking you can go top 10. You go in thinking, can I just finish, you know, and I would be happy with that. So yeah, that was a good day.
Yeah. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And then actually, so since then, I mean, back to your original question, I've incorporated strength training. Like it's now totally a part. And I had kind of done strength training before that, but never. And now I lift weights pretty much year round, and it's been huge for, you know, my durability and keeping me healthy. And then again, I've adapted sort of Jay's plan of focusing more on quality, not quantity. And I think a lot of people think I don't have time to lift weights, but really it's a 30-minute program and just 2 days a week. So it's like an hour. And so, you know, I'll skip a workout to fit in the strength training. You know, I'll skip a swim, bike, or run to prioritize the strength training. And so that's been great. And I see Jay now even healthy, just, you know, sort of weekly check-ins and tune-ups. And then he moves strength stuff around to like areas that need improvement. And sometimes we do different things. So it varies throughout the year, but he's been a constant. So that's good.
Yeah. And I imagine with you've been in the sport now for 10 years, like you're always having to find a new edge for your training.
Yeah.
Of like a new area in which you can be challenged in.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I feel like at times you can reach ceilings or you can plateau.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think things change too. And as well as your body, you know, like as you're getting older, you know, maybe it does take me a little bit more time to recover than it used to. I think mentally I'm way more like, I just know better, you know, whereas maybe I didn't have the confidence when I was younger to take a rest day. And now it's like, okay, you know, it's not the end of the world if you skip a workout because you're not feeling great. You know, you'll be able to get it back in a couple days and things like that.
Out of the three disciplines, which one are you finding the most amount of joy in right now?
Well, probably running for sure, you know, just because I didn't get to do it for a whole year. I actually think a small side story, I did my longest run actually since probably Ironman Hawaii when I last competed in Ironman. On Sunday, I ran 18 miles. And yeah, and my girlfriend came with me on the mountain bike. And she's like, you're not going to put music in your ears for this? And I was like, oh, no. Like, you know, I'm like, the novelty of running is still so new to me, you know, after not being able to run for a year pretty much, that I don't need music to motivate. You know, I'm still having fun and enjoying it. And yeah, I hope it doesn't end.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's so much fun.
Yeah.
And so right now in your training, what are you building up to this year? What's 2016 hold?
Yeah, so we qualify for the World Championships based on a point system. And so if you compete at Ironman Hawaii, your points from that competition actually carry over to the next year. And so because I didn't compete, I basically started the year with 0 points. And you usually need around 4,000 points to qualify. And so for me, it was early on in the year just getting back racing again. So I started racing in January, which is very early. And I was not very fit, but it was more just a matter of getting back out the door again, getting confidence again. And so I've done a few different races, sort of trying, and every time you race, you accumulate points. So, yeah, I started racing early on, which was different for me, like I said, and it's also different to like show up at a race and not be super fit, but at some point, you know, you got to get out the door and try again. And so the big goal for this year, obviously, is qualifying for Ironman Hawaii and seeing if I can get back into that top 10 again. But right now I'm more focused on just qualifying because that's kind of the first hurdle. So I've done a few different races. I raced in Panama and then Puerto Rico and most recently in Brazil. And then I'm getting ready to race in a few weeks in St. George, Utah at the US Championships. And then sort of my big race for the first half of the year is in Australia. It's the Ironman Cairns. and that's in early June. So I'm kind of, that's what I'm getting fit for right now. And it's pretty fun because each week I'm gaining more, like when you take as much time off as I did, you see huge fitness gains. And so each week I'm kind of getting more confidence and belief in my body, and training's going better each week, and we're kind of able to up the ante a little bit more. And so it's been exciting and fun. And like I said, I'm enjoying it a lot more than I expected. And I think that that's just perspective from not being able to do anything for last year. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And hopefully after the race, so the next two races, I will have an idea of if I've qualified or not. And so that'll kind of dictate what happens in the back half of the year.
Cool.
So, yeah.
And so when you see the Ironman in Australia, we've spoken to taking risks. Mm-hmm. What is a risk you want to take in that race?
Oh, man. I haven't thought that far ahead yet. I guess three things that have been sort of at the forefront of my mind this year are three words with a P, and that would be patience, progress, and process. So I think in the past, maybe a mistake I've had or like a trap that's easy to fall into is not being task-oriented and just maybe more outcome-oriented, like, okay, I have to win this race or I have to do this. And so for me, it's just been very laser focused on each week. And so I'm just very in the moment. And as long as I'm improving week to week, then I find joy and happiness in that. And whereas before it used to be like, well, if I didn't win, then I suck, this sucks, it's not fun. And so I guess that that would be a big takeaway that I've had from not racing is just becoming more like, am I improving and am I doing better personally? Because that's really ultimately, I think, what we're after, you know, whether it's sport or business or family, things like that. So that's a bit weird to say, like, I haven't really thought about my goals for the race. I mean, I know I kind of need a top five at that race to qualify for the world championship. So that's kind of a goal that I would hope to have, but I haven't. I guess I'm more like, all right, let me get through this race in St. George and then we'll think of that. But I did buy plane tickets, so I am committed. So I am going. But yeah.
I love what you're saying too about taking risks or challenging yourself. Mm-hmm. Like your challenge right now, as you said, is to be more process oriented.
Yeah.
To be in the here and now instead of actually a couple months ahead.
Yep, exactly. And I mean, I think, you know, as the race gets closer and builds momentum, that's sort of where I'll build more of a game plan and start to think, you know, okay, my cycling's going well, maybe I'll take a risk on the bike, or, you know, and a lot of the time risk in a race is a game time decision of do I push now or do I push later, or, you know, and you know, it's conditioned upon like race conditions, if it's hot or if it's cold, you know, what your competition's doing. So a lot of those are in the moment kind of things, but yeah, I mean, and I guess it's a risk flying all the way. I mean, I could have raced here in the US. And so that was kind of a bigger risk of, you know, it's a financial risk to go that far. But I'm looking forward to it. I tend to do well when I travel and get to see new places. And so hopefully it'll work out for me. Yeah, exactly.
And it's amazing. Your husband, Chris, has made some really beautiful videos of your guys' journeys together. Yeah. What is that like to have so many things documented? Is it just, are you used to the camera being always present?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I get annoyed. I'm not a very good wife. Like he'll be like, oh, we got to film this. And I give the old eye roll, but then he'll come out with this video and I'm like, that's amazing. And he's like, told you, like, why didn't you play along more? So he would say I'm probably not the best at cooperating, but, yeah, you know, it's interesting. Chris was actually watching me race and he got bored. This was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And he just had his iPhone and he took some video clips during the race. And then while I was out during the run, he like just on his iPhone made a little mini movie clip and thought, oh, let's just post this after the race. And it like went pretty well. Digital media has obviously, you know, gained momentum every year. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And, so yeah, that's kind of how it started was he had a completely different job. It wasn't doing at all what he's doing now. And so he just posted this video that he made on an iPhone and then it became a GoPro and then it became a Steadicam and now it's a drone. Like it's just gotten bigger and better. And now he does that, the same stuff he does for me, he does for other companies. So he basically has created a whole job off of just what started as like a little iPhone video at Wildflower. So It's pretty crazy to think.
Wow.
Yeah. And actually cool now story. He's almost too busy to like do stuff for me sometimes. So I'm like, hey, when are you going to do something for me? You know, he's like, I do a lot for you. And he does. But yeah. So I'm glad to see that he's busy. It's awesome to see him also following his passion. So
yeah, he creates such beautiful work. That's
yeah.
wild.
Yeah.
In the sport of triathlon, is there anyone either who's actually racing right now or a past person that you really look up to, like someone you consider a mentor for you?
Yeah, one of the people I met early on was Chris Lieto. So his brother Matt actually lives here in Bend. But Chris and I had the same coach early on in my career, and he was one of the first professionals that I was able to train with, and he's an amazing athlete still, you know, but I was able to do a few training camps with him, and he was the consummate professional both on the course and off the course. And so it was great to have him as a role model sort of, and he taught me a lot besides swimming, biking, and running, but like how to handle sponsorships and how to deal with sort of presenting yourself to the media. And he actually runs an organization now called More Than Sport. So he cared a lot about giving back to the sport. And at the end of the day, that when we race for more than just ourselves. And so I am involved with his sort of nonprofit organization, and they do different projects at different races that basically help give back to the communities that we're racing in. And so it's kind of cool to go full circle and be working for him now. But he was a great athlete when he raced. So yeah, and we had a lot of fun. I went to a couple of training camps with him and have had a lot of fun training together as well.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I think you said something really powerful to me, which is, you know, it's more than just this sport.
Yeah.
Like, so when you think about your legacy as an athlete or as a human being,
yeah.
What do you want that to be?
Yeah, I mean, I realize now, like, I'm 10 years into my career, and there's some of my competitors that have won every race they've done or, you know, have multiple world titles. And I realize that I probably am not going to be that athlete. I have, you know, some great sporting accolades though, but I would, you know, hope that I'm known for more than just being a winning athlete, but also, approachable, someone that gave back, someone that was honest and fair, and friendly. And like you said, grit and grace, you know, I want to be known as someone that's relentless and never gives up, but also is a good sport and good leadership skills.
So. Yeah, you are all those things.
Man, thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Lindsay, for taking the time. I know we've been trying to connect for a bit, and you've been out of Bend, and I've been out of Bend, but
yes.
It's a real joy, and I'm excited to see what the rest of this year is going to hold.
Cool. Well, thanks for having me, and I'm going to see you around town all the time.
I'm so excited for Lindsay to be back in healthy racing in 2016. If you want to follow along her journey, I'd highly recommend you check out her website, lindsaycorbin.com, where you'll get to see the beautiful videos of Lindsay's training adventures that her husband Chris makes that we talked about in today's episode. Okay, you guys, if you want to help me continue bringing weekly podcasts to all of you for free and at the highest quality, please consider supporting my Patreon page, where for as little as $2 a month, you can support Rue and get insider access into the podcast, behind-the-scenes clips from recording sessions, opportunities to be coached by me, and get a personal shout-out on the podcast. So visit patreon.com/runningonohm, that's patreon.com/runningonohm, and know that any amount of support helps. Thank you guys always for reaching out and letting me know that Running on Ohm is a part of your life. Whether it be Instagram or Twitter, it always makes my day to hear from one of you and to know that these stories have resonated. If you have any feedback on Running on Ohm and want to help spread the word, the easiest way to do that is to leave an iTunes review. I read every single one of them. And you can actually do that right now, right from the podcast application on your phone. If you have an iPhone, click on the Reviews tab and let me know what you think. A few seconds could make a world of difference. So thank you for tuning in today. Thank you for supporting Running on Ohm. And deep gratitude to each and every one of you. Yes, you. This is your host, Julia Hanlon, and I hope you have a Rue-filled day.